Anna Glavinsky on TRE in the afternoon.
And now we're going to be talking about quite a disturbing topic, so please be aware of that as we go into it. I'm speaking to author Eduardo Goncalves. Hopefully you can correct me if I pronounce that wrong. 20 Elephants in 75 Minutes, it's called. And I'd like to definitely clear up with the very first question. That isn't a brag on your part, is it?
It most certainly is not. And thanks for having me on. No, that's unfortunately something that a Spanish trophy hunter said. So it's the title of a book I've just brought out about the world's top trophy hunters. This particular hunter, he's shot over 4,000 animals for sport. That includes 1,300 elephants, 340 lions, hundreds of leopards and rhinos and buffaloes, and even a couple of gorillas. And he was actually insistent in this investigation that he only hunted in moderation. So it begs belief, really, what he thought hunting in excess might be. So this is one of the three books that I've just brought out, because this year, as you probably might remember, it's the 10th anniversary of the killing of Cecil the Lion, who was shot 10 years ago by that American dentist. So for the last few years, I've been undercover inside the trophy hunting industry. I joined Safari Club International, which is the biggest group of hunters, and together with a colleague, I met with other hunters, spoke with them, corresponded. They sent me photos and videos. I visited their trophy rooms and their taxidermists, went to their hunting estates and so on. And so the trilogy comes out of that. And so that first book, 20 Elephants in 75 Minutes, is about the trophy hunters who've shot the most animals in the world. Then the second book, it's called Shoot One Lion, Get One Free. And that's about the companies, the businesses that are involved in this industry, so that sell trophy hunting holidays to people and to families. And then the third book is called Mainlining on Heroin. And that's about Britain's trophy hunters and British companies. And all of those quotes are things that people have actually said. So Shoot One Lion, Get One Free, that was an offer being made by a hunting company. Mainlining on Heroin was how a leading British hunter described the sport for him. He said, it's like mainlining on heroin. Once you get onto it, you can't get off.
Wow. And is that how, so these people were speaking to you, presumably that you were undercover, so they didn't know at that time, you know, the things they were saying were going to go any further. So it was kind of no hold, you know, people were saying what they genuinely, truly felt and thought. What would you say is the overruling feeling, justification, connection between these people when they're just naturally chatting amongst themselves?
I mean, yes, you're absolutely right. I didn't obviously use my real name. And so they were opening up to me, in fact, almost embraced me as like an old friend. And they told me about how, you know, the adrenaline rush that they got when they shot lions. There's one guy who said he cried with joy when he killed his first elephant, went into a trophy room, which had 500 animals in it, including a polar bear, went onto the estates where you could shoot rhinos, and where the owner said he'd personally shot a giraffe because he thought it was gay. You know, others were telling me how they'd have a few beers in the evening and go out and shoot the monkeys out of the trees, and so on and so forth. And the motives they gave were, you know, there was two words actually that came across again and again in the conversations. One was adrenaline, and the other was addiction. You know, there's a place in the States actually where you can go and shoot zebras without having to get on a plane, and they say there that hunting is like a drug to people who do it, and that was something that people were saying to me quite a lot. So they were saying things like, there's something about it that really excites me. My adrenaline flowed so fast, my whole body tingled with excitement. I was so excited, I was just about paralyzed. I felt the adrenaline coursing through my veins. And then there was a couple that even went further, and it almost sounded a bit like sexual gratification. So one guy, he was saying, you know, my knees tremble when I have a target in the crosshairs. And another one saying, it's about as much fun as you can have with your clothes on.
Wow. Okay. And would they ever talk about what other people thought, you know, if they ever had heard negative comments, or, you know, not knowing that you would have had arguments against what they were doing, would they just naturally talk against any of those arguments anyway?
I mean, when you speak to them as if you're one of them, they use one discourse. If you go to them as a journalist or as a, you know, as a critic, then they use a language script, which essentially comes from the industry that says, oh, this is all about conservation. You know, we're helping these animals. If it wasn't for them, if it wasn't, you know, for us hunters, you know, there'd be no need for these animals, no justification for them to exist. And so they would all die out, which is quite a perverse logic to use. Some of them were critical about other hunters, actually. One of the things that happens is that the trophy hunting industry encourages people to shoot a lot of animals in order to win prizes. So Safari Club International, which was the group that I joined, it has dozens of these awards. And a lot of them are a bit like those computer games where you have to shoot more and more aliens or whatever, or baddies, in order to get onto the next level. So there's one prize, for example, it's called the Hunting Achievement Award. It's got five different levels. To reach level one, you've got to shoot 17 different species. Level two is 30. Level three is 50. Level four is 100. And then the top level, which they call the Diamond Prize, you have to shoot animals from 125 different species. And as well as that, you can get special prizes for shooting big game animals with novel weapons. So things like crossbows and revolvers. And so, in fact, this same Spanish guy who shot over 4,000 animals, he was actually very critical of people who went and shot all these animals just to get these prizes. And he also told a couple of stories of hunters that he knew where, for example, they'd shot a rhino with a revolver. Now, a rhino is a big animal. It's got a pretty thick skin. Killing it with a high-powered rifle is pretty difficult. Now, shooting it with a revolver is nigh on impossible. And what was happening was, yeah, the guy, the bullets were, you know, hitting home, but, you know, it was just bleeding everywhere. He just, the Spanish hunter described the scene as being like viewing a stuck pig. Unfortunately, one of the things that happens that people don't know very much about this is that the vast majority of animals shot by trophy hunters don't die quick, clean deaths. They die very slow and painful deaths, partly because of this trend towards using novel weapons. Also, because trophy hunters have to have no training or qualifications whatsoever. You can go on the internet right now and buy yourself a cheetah or a polar bear or, all sorts of animals, elephants, leopards. And you can just buy it there and then. You don't have to have any qualifications. Plus, you're shooting from a long way away, from about 200 yards or so, for your own safety. And because you don't want to damage the look of the trophy, you're not trying to hit it in the middle of the head, you try to do what they call a heart-lung shot, which is really, really difficult to do. Now, if you're an amateur, you're shooting from a long way away, you're hoping that animal's going to stand very, very still, and you're hoping there's not going to be any wind. And of course, none of these things tend to happen. So what tends to happen in a lot of the accounts that the hunters give is that they then go on this chase to try and find the animal, they follow the blood trail, they follow bits of skin and bone, perhaps. And in many cases, they actually lose the animal altogether. So, you know, they end up dying very slow, painful deaths of sepsis and infection and so on and so forth. It is, you know, such a brutal and cruel sport, as well as being such an archaic and unnecessary one.
And in terms of legality, is everything justifiable under the word of the law?
Yeah, this is the crazy thing. We think we have international laws that protect endangered wildlife. And, you know, some listeners might have heard of CITES, for example, which stops trade. And, you know, for example, rhino horns. You're not supposed to go and shoot a rhino in order to sell its horn and make traditional Chinese medicine out of it, etc. But the big problem is that there's a great big loophole in the law, which says trophy hunting is okay. And the reason it says it's okay, it says, well, it's not really commercial, it's not really trade. Well, of course it is, because you're going to pay a lot of money to shoot that rhino or that elephant or whatever. You're paying the hunting company, you're going to pay the taxidermist, you're going to pay the shipping company. Of course it's a commercial enterprise. But of course the wildlife traffickers have thought, wait, there's a fantastic loophole here that we can exploit. And this has literally happened. So wildlife traffickers have been able to acquire rhino horns worth hundreds of millions of dollars and to smuggle those illegally into the Chinese, traditional Chinese market, but under the guise of legal trophy hunting. There was one wildlife trafficker who used to go, and he was from Thailand, and he'd go and recruit prostitutes in Vietnam to get on a plane with him to go to South Africa. And they would supposedly shoot the rhino. Of course, they'd never shot anything in their life. They didn't even know how to hold a rifle. And so a hunting guide would actually have to shoot it on their behalf. And of course, these were illiterate peasants. And so somebody else had to sort of put a cross on the bit of paper to say, yes, I hereby declare I'm a trophy hunter. This is for my personal use only. Oh, as I say, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of rhino horns were acquired in this way, using this legal trophy hunting loophole. And the same happens with things like gallbladders from bears. You know, you see even today in the CITES trade database, you know, hundreds and hundreds of records of bears' gallbladders, which are used to get the bile, which is supposed to have aphrodisiac effects and so on. Now, how on earth are you supposed to hang a gallbladder above the fireplace as a hunting trophy? Of course, it's nonsense. Yeah, so it just makes a mockery of the law.
I'm horrified listening to this. I'm sure many other people are. How did you manage to bite your tongue whilst you were infiltrating these groups? And did you go to any places where you saw things sort of close up and firsthand?
It was the hardest thing of all of this was to bite your tongue, because you want to explode in rage. You want to say, you know, what the hell did you just say or did you do? And you've got to understand the scale of the slaughter that these people engage in. There was another guy who said, well, you know, I've actually lost count of the number of animals that I've shot, but I know it's in the thousands. He actually had bought 4 private jets so that he could be permanently flying about to different places to shoot animals. There was another guy, he was Canadian. He'd been on an 18-year non-stop hunting spree, literally 18 years without stopping. There was, there was Ron Thompson. He's a Zimbabwean. He shot over 5,000 elephants. And he said things like, it falls to the ground, its eyes already staring into the hereafter, the exhilaration is complete. And a lot of them seem to take pleasure out of the harm they're causing, just as much as the, you know, the thrill of the kill as well. There's Cole Allison, who was a newspaper editor in Australia. He shot a lion. He said, I shot it through the left eye, blowing out the back of the skull. There's the son of a former police chief who shoots lots of lions and elephants. And he said, the lion's head snaps backward and explodes with smoke from my bullet. There was a couple who actually, and they have children as well, and they filled their house with hundreds of hunting trophies. And they say, we have a large wall of animals that we call the wall of pain. And, you know, and it's extraordinary to think that these people are saying these things as if they are perfectly normal things to say. And of course, they only said those things because I said, oh, listen, I'm one of you guys. You know, I'm interested in doing this. You know, I want to go and do what's it been like for you? Tell me how it felt for you. And that's what I try to do in these books. It's not just about telling the facts or the figures. It's about documenting why they do it. And it's allowing them to say in their own words what they feel about doing it.
And what have you concluded about the emotional state of these people? Is it just, you know, they're addicted to that thrill of it? Are these people sort of decent people in normal everyday life? And then they just have this like wild side where they think it's fine to just, you know, go off and be really, really bloodthirsty. Is there any characteristics or moral compass definitions that sum them up in other ways?
Do you know, one of the most startling things that I found, and I've been investigating this for almost a decade now, and I didn't think I could be surprised anymore. But when I looked at the people who'd shot the most animals, quite a few of them were doctors, people in the medical profession. I mean, remember, obviously, Walter Palmer, he was a dentist, the guy who shot Cecil.
Yeah.
But 2 of the top 10 hunters in the world today are doctors. And that really shocked me. And that's including in the UK, there's a Harley Street gynecologist who's actually recently become a children's author. There's a quite a well-known transplant surgeon in the UK. They are some of the leading trophy hunters in the UK. You know, it's very interesting. The FBI have done quite a lot of research into the link between animal cruelty and other forms of serious crime. And they found that trophy hunters are quite often more likely to be involved in domestic violence, to be involved in child abuse. There was an awful, awful case, a case study that I read in a paper of theirs about this trophy hunter who would kidnap women, and he would drive, put them in the boot of his car, drive out to the middle of a forest, then get them out, strip them naked, and then say, run. And he would then stalk them in exactly the same way as he would an animal, and then kill them in the same way and take a trophy in the same way. And we know that quite a few, I mean, in the UK and the US, quite a few notorious killers started their criminal careers, if you like, as people who were involved in animal cruelty. I mean, in the UK, you got people like Ian Hunter, I think it was, who was the Soham killer. There was Ian Brady, the Moors murderer. There was John Venables, the sort of more influential of the two children who killed Jamie Bulger. In the US, you've got the Boston Strangler, Jeffrey Dahmer, the killer of the Columbine school killers, etc., etc., etc. There's a very interesting psychologist actually in the UK called Professor Jeff Beattie, who's interviewed a lot of very interesting and difficult groups, if you like, including terrorists. So he's, for example, sat with people who are involved on both sides of the Northern Ireland conflict. Now, he's also done a study of the psychology of trophy hunters. And I was speaking to him a while ago, and he said, you know, the people who scare me the most wasn't the terrorists. It was the trophy hunters. Those were the people who were the most devoid of values, of morality, who were most likely to try to find ways, you know, absolutely dishonest ways of excusing their behavior. He found those people more worrying than some of the people you or I might think are the most dangerous people in society.
Wow, that is really interesting. I feel like, although I've got a really horrible taste in my mouth right now, I do feel like I could continue talking to you for a long time, but we are running out of time, unfortunately. So my final question, if we could wrap it up quite quickly, is, do you think that there is going to be any move to start shutting down and clamping down on this? Is your book helping to pave the way for that? What's the future look like?
Absolutely. There are more and more countries in Europe, but elsewhere as well, that are implementing bans on imports of hunting trophies. Britain and Switzerland have said they're going to bring in a full ban. Belgium and Netherlands already have. France has a lion ban. It's extending it to other species. You've got other countries, Poland, Finland, even countries such as Germany and Italy and Spain have got bills going through their legislatures. And the US already has some restrictions as well. And of course, most animals are killed by American trophy hunters. So that's happening. And we also have a lot of countries that don't allow trophy hunting to take part. I was just doing a totting up, actually, just before. Almost 200 countries and territories around the world didn't have any animals shot by trophy hunters in their countries last year. And when you look at the opinion polls as well, whether it's in America, and that's a country obviously with a large hunting and gun lobby and culture, but in Europe as well, around 8 out of 10 people want trophy hunting to end. And around the same number in Southern Africa, where a lot of this goes on, wanted to end as well. So in terms of public opinion, everyone seems to agree by a vast majority that this is something that shouldn't be happening, certainly not in the 21st century. This sounds like something that should have happened, well, should have been ended when the empire and the colonialism all ended. So well, people can do something, of course. They can get in touch with their elected representative, tell them how strongly they feel about it, tell them that their vote will depend on it as well. You know, we at the Campaign to Ban Trophy Hunting have a lot of information and resources which people can access, including these books. If you just go to bantrophyhunting.org, you've got everything there, and hopefully that will help bring this awful, awful, ghastly industry to an end.
Thank you so much. That was Eduardo Goncalves, and his book is called 20 Elephants in 75 Minutes. And we'll pop more information on Talk Radio Europe social media if you'd like to follow this campaign. Thanks and goodbye.
Thank you.